It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ready, go!
Welcome to Breeder Syndicate.
So we're pretty excited today. You know, we've been doing a lot of early breeding talk, trying to source some of the history of how we got to where we are today. We've talked about breeding techniques. We talked about a bunch of early 80s and 90s seed banks. We focused on Neville quite a bit because he was one of the largest seed banks in the 80s. And we're pretty excited today because we have the other largest seed bank of the 80s, the Super Sativa Seed Club, which was next to Neville, the biggest seed bank in Holland at the time, and lots of famous strains like Williams Wonder and Beatrix Choice and things of that nature came out of their seed bank. And we're lucky in that the founder is still alive and well and was excited to talk to us. So we want to bring you a couple stage interview with Karel, who is the owner and founder of the Super Sativa Seed Club. And we're going to be asking him a lot of questions about the 80s, the style they were doing things, how he got certain strains, and really all the areas of interest we can think of. So this is kind of like the second big piece to 80s seed banks and modern breeding, and we're pretty excited. So here it is.
Prepare yourself.
Okay, let's go.
So you are Karel. It's pronounced Karel.
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 Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to meet you. You're a legend in this business, and a lot of us would love to have this opportunity to speak with you. So I it's an honor.
Okay. Take it easy, man. I'm just a guy of flesh and blood.
Yeah, same here. But it's really cool to be able to have this opportunity to ask you some questions about the history of SSSC. So okay. Where would you like to start?
Yeah, maybe. It's a long time ago already, of course. In 1985, we started.
Yes.
And those days... Yeah, we were squatters, and we were like you are, man. Really.
Yeah.
We were activists, and our idea was because in those days in Holland it was not legal to grow
wheat. Yes.
But it was like a little bit. It was not a big deal to do it, and not many people did it. And yeah. We started to grow, and we learned about growing under metal halide lights from people who went to the States, and they saw it there.
Oh wow!
Yeah. I worked in those days in a coffee shop, and a friend of us, he went to the States, and he saw how you guys did this, and nobody in those days did this in Holland, and I thought, yeah, let's give it a try, and I think we were the first in Holland to grow under metal halides in those days. it was.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, and so we're looking to live close to the big horticulture centrum of Holland. It's called the Westland, because in Holland it's really, we are the number one in the world in horticulture things.
Yes.
So we decided to start this. The only problem we had, we didn't have any seeds.
Oh, so how do you start sourcing your seeds and your lines? What makes you choose what you do?
Yeah, because the thing is, in those days, the cannabis was only from the tropical countries.
Yes.
And it was all seeded with a lot of seeds. So if you try those seeds in Holland, they didn't flower in time, because we are quite north. And those, the sativas are from the Ecuador.
Yeah.
And so we didn't have success, really not. And but one of the guys, he went to the States, one of our friends, because we needed seeds, and he went to New York, and he had to a certain office. I bet I don't call the name, because that's not good for them.
Yeah, for sure.
And then he said, "No, man, we don't have seeds." And but he said, "Yeah, but I come from Holland, and I came specially to you to pick up some seeds." And after 1 week, they said, okay, we will give you some seeds. And those were the William Wonder seeds.
So those came out of New York?
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Yes. And so then we started to grow those seeds. And then we had quite, not a big success, but a little bit success. And after a while, the famous Sam de Skunk Man, you've heard from him.
Yes, of course.
And he came to live in Holland, and he contacted us, because he thought, when I live in Holland, I have to be in touch with the seed guys.
And absolutely.
And those days, you had Neville of the seed bank. And we were the second one, so there were basically two seed banks in the world.
That's right.
Sam, he came to, we became in contact with him, and he told us, now I'm coming here to live in Holland, but I don't have a place to grow, and maybe you can help me or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said, "Hey, I have a nice collection of seeds," because he did a lot of breeding already in the States.
Yes.
And his number one thing was skunk number one. It was really the first variety in the world that really somebody took the effort to inbred it and to make a selection out of a big group. And basically, so we were very happy with those seeds. And he had something from his private stash as well. And he said, "This is my private thing, but there are only 20 seeds left." So he he gave us a seed, and those were the hay seeds. It was the original.
The hay seeds. Oh, so he sold you some of the original hay seeds.
Yes. So he had 20 seeds, and he gave 10 to us, and he gave 10 to Neville.
Because, so these were from the same batch. You and Neville's hay
from
seeds.
The same batch. And I said, those seeds, they were already like 10 years old. And he said, "This is really, we need to germinate them, because And I gave it to you because you understand how to do it, and so we can save the seeds." And we were not really, we tried the haze, but we did not like it, because it took too long to flower, and it was very small buds. And at the same time, we were very glad with the skunk number one seeds, because we were used to the fluffy sativas that were from South Africa, from Jamaica, from Colombia. So we were really happy to see the big buds of the skunk number one.
And the density and the resin.
It was really a lot of resin and a lot of smell. And but we decided to make a cross between skunk number one and the and one of the hazes we had left.
Okay.
And from this cross, we made a big selection. And that's, then we were very happy to find one with the correct the smell and the taste of the haze and the bud structure of the skunk number one. So that was really happy that we could grow hazes and dig fat buds. And the nice thing about this, I still have this plant, and it's now 35 years old.
What?
And, we still have it, and it's our flagship thing, of course. And we have now based a lot of our crosses on. We made it with this old school haze, as we call it, and it smells like cat piss, and it's really a dark, earthy taste. But it's a very uplifting high, and it's really. It's a really nice plant. It's very difficult to grow because if you make a mistake, if your room gets too hot, it starts to flower again. And it's really a matter it's a difficult thing to do.
I can't believe that's still around. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. And you're still using it in your current breeding programs?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The thing is, we stopped with the Super Sativa seed clip after about 5 years because it was really too, it became a little bit too successful.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And in those days, it was really, we were a bit afraid of, Ronald Reagan, the war on drugs was going on strong in those days. So basically, we quit the Super Sativa seed clip. But I kept on growing and doing cannabis in all different ways. And like 3 or 4 years ago, I have two sons, they are growers as well. And said, let's do it again, man. Why don't you do it? Because everybody knows you. And some people think you are a legend. So do it again. So we started again and... it's now quite successful. And now in Holland, we are also getting a situation of legal growing because in Holland, we have also always been on the forefront of the growing.
Sure.
But we lost a little bit because your guys are doing it very good, of course, now in the States and in the legal situation in a lot of... in a lot of states, so we thought Holland can't stay behind, man, because we are the ones who
who
how to do the cannabis thing. And now we are looking. We started a lobby in Holland, and we also try to change the law. We basically wrote a law together with the Dutch government. And now there is going to be a big a trial, and the Dutch government has given out 10 permits to grow legal for the Dutch coffee shops.
We were
lucky to one of the permits because 150 people applied for the permit.
I'm sure.
And only 10 permits. So, like from the 150 people, 100 didn't make it because their plan was not good enough. And they were not, because you need to comply with a lot of rules, because you need to know about cannabis, you need to have the money, you need to have to grow on a big scale, you need to have good contacts with the coffee shops, and we all have this. So now we are very happy because then we can do our breeding really, because we have done the breeding always in the illegal situation.
Yeah,
you know?
Same here.
So you can imagine that it's for us... difficult because we like to see it, but it's also a little bit difficult to see that people like Exotic Mike, Exotic Genetics, is really they can work in the legal situation now for over 3, 4, 5 years, and you can see the results. And
he has a lot of people making seed for him everywhere, all over.
And in Holland, we still have the strange, difficult strains to grow with the special terp profiles. And that's what we want to offer, something different, because it's cookies everywhere nowadays.
I surely hope you guys stick with some of the base old stuff, because that's what we need. Nobody wants cookies anymore over here. Everybody's tired of cookies.
Yeah, really. Yeah, because over here it's still new.
it's still new over there, right? Like
a strange, but also a comic situation that we went to the States to get the seeds.
Uh huh.
then we grow, we did a lot of breeding and things. Then we sold it back to the States. And now the States is doing very well. And now we have to go to the States again to take seeds back to Holland.
So I think we can help there in that situation because we have everything over here and you don't have to fly out to get it.
you understand that. So that's nice that it's going all over the world. And the idea of the Super Sativa Seed Club was because we were very political involved. Our idea was to help the States. Is a little bit strange to say, but we were in this position that we could do semi-legal our things. And in those days, you had a lot of people coming back from Vietnam. Those were our clients, you know, because they ordered the seeds from us, and they were the ones who really did a lot of guerrilla farming in the California, where it's still going, in the same place where it's now all happening. Yeah. So our idea was when we sell the seeds to a lot of different people in the U.S., there will be a lot of different refrigerators stocked with seeds. So for the government, it's quite difficult to stop this, you know, because it's spreading everywhere. And in those days, you didn't have the internet, and if you live in a certain city, okay, you can spread the seeds, give it to your friends. Yeah. But it's a bit difficult when you live in California to make sure that also the people in...
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Texas or Alaska. Oh, sure. So we our idea was to spread it everywhere with the idea this is not going to stop anymore then.
Yeah, it's a beautiful idea. It's like Johnny Appleseed, modern day Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah, and also we were not in for the money because we really were in for the love of the plant, and we still are. And of course, the money was nice, but because our business model was a little bit strange because people from the States had to send money to Holland.
Yeah.
Without knowing who we are.
Oh, sure, sure.
And then they had to trust us that we sent the seeds back to them.
Absolutely.
And the first few years, people were a little bit reluctant to send us money because,
of course.
Maybe who are we? Nobody knew.
Yeah.
And so at one point, the people from High Times, they came to interview us because we run an ad in High Times. And they thought, oh man, this is really this is for real.
Yeah.
So they made a nice cover story about us. And from those days, it really exploded, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we got like people from everywhere in the world ordering seeds, and we thought, oh, this is really getting too big, and we quit with this because it was getting a little bit out of hands.
It got a little hot.
Because in a lot of people from Japan, from Australia, from Canada, from everywhere, they start to order seeds because it was really the first, we really were the first ones to do this. And so it was a big, big success. And we were... Robert Connell Clark, you know him as well, I think.
Oh, yes.
He told also always, the wisest thing you did is quit with this.
Yeah, we saw what happened with Neville. We saw what happened. It ruined his life.
Yeah. So it's really, and now I'm, yeah, we're still going strong, and we are still loving the plants, and we are still very happy to make combinations with the new things from the States with our old stuff, and a lot of things turned out very well because we like to have. We like the layered taste, you know.
Because oh, yeah.
If we do something with haze, we can keep the haze taste, but also we can combine it with like Gorilla glue or whatever, and it sure. makes it really a thing that we like. That it's not one taste, but a lot of different tastes in one variety, and. Yeah, and we are not so afraid of doing things like 12 weeks of flowering because sure. yeah, a lot of people are afraid to do this and they think it's difficult, but it's really worth waiting a few weeks extra.
Americans are finally being more receptive to long flowering strains as of the past maybe 2 or 3 years, I've noticed. Hazes yeah. are finally starting to pick up in the U.S., whereas they were never a staple here, except in Santa Cruz in the late 60s, early 70s, mid 70s. But nowadays, people want that. They want a little bit of that trippy Colombian
because we work together with Ace Seeds as well. Do you know Ace?
Oh
Seeds?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's these are our friends as well, and they're
very
really
good company.
They really have like these super strong sativas and now like in the legal situation in the US, I do not understand why people are afraid to from a longer flowering time, because if you have the space to do this, yeah, I can imagine in the illegal situation when you don't have much space, it's a bit. Yeah, of course, and I can imagine that you want to speed up things a little bit, but what I have seen always is it takes 4 weeks longer to finish, but mm-hmm. but the yield in
grand is there.
It's 30-40% more.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, your results are exactly the same as when you grow short flowering varieties.
Sure.
Because the what we in Holland always say, the modern American strains, they lack yield, they lack weight, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why we try to make crosses with the new American strains to make plants with a bigger yield.
Yes.
Because the sativas, you know how they flower, the buds are arm length.
And yes,
in the cookies you have a bird, 20 centimeters. You don't have anything. Another bird. It's nice, yeah. But it doesn't bring weight in the scale.
Yeah, no. Cookies is very low yielding, and yeah, the high doesn't last too long either. So a good haze hybrid with the cookies would be awesome. You know, bring a much better high to cookies that isn't there.
Yeah.
So I have some questions for you. Do you have a lot of good a good memory for like where you sourced certain things or the history of certain strains that you put out? Yeah,
no, not so, that's a bit of a problem because the old school haze clone we still have, uh-huh. and I'm in touch with in Canada a lot of people. They still have the Friesland Indica.
Yes.
It was very famous. Almost yes. The people told me that a lot of people from 50, 60 years old now, that uh-huh. they started, when they started to smoke, they all started with Friesland Indica. It was over there, it was really a big thing. Yes. And now, today I talked with somebody from Canada, and he knows a guy in the US who still has the Beatrix Choice and M33. And the thing is, in so many years, a lot of things happened. So, to be honest, I lost a little bit track of where everything is now.
Yeah.
And in those days, we basically, Sam the Skunkman he provided us with seeds, and a lot of seeds we just took from the bags of wheat that we.
Yeah.
That we bought in the coffee shops, and in those days, what we had in coffee in Amsterdam, we had a coffee shop. It was called Durban Poison.
Yes,
and they only sold cannabis from South Africa.
Yes.
So we made a lot of crosses with the Durban poison because it's just, South African is also, it's far to the south in the world. So the flowering period is more or less the same as we have in Holland.
Yes.
So this was very nice to make crosses between skunk number one, Durban poison. And then we gave it a nice name, and it was like our variety. And it was not a big deal because it was really, we took the seeds from the bags and we grew them, and we pollinated the one that we like best. And we had a new variety because in those days it was not really inbreeding.
Yeah.
We did not really do that because, to be honest, the demand for our seeds was so big that we even didn't have time to do this, you know?
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I understand that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
One thing that's been happening in the U.S. the past maybe 15 years since I've been around, I've noticed there is a, and this is unfortunate, seriously unfortunate, but every 2 or 3 years, someone will come up and pretend to have a big collection of old SSSC stuff.
Yeah.
And then sell it and it's all fake. You know, just happened to be a Beatrix choice. Someone just popped up with fake Beatrix choice. That's probably what you're referring to.
Yeah.
That's not in anyone's collections over here.
You know who Beatrix is, yeah?
Oh yeah. we've studied your strains for so many years. The Williams Wonder clone is still out here. That clone is still available.
Yeah.
There's still seeds. Every once in a while, you'll find Williams Wonder seeds that are pure.
Okay. Nice.
M39. Still around, Friesland still around.
It's also a famous one, yeah. Because in Canada, I went to visit Canada, and then a guy he showed me the Friesland Indica, and then I was really like, there is of course a lot of things happened in all those years, and the quality is becoming better and better, and it's of course I was not really. Very proud to see the Friesland Indica. I thought, this is not really what we like those days and these days, you know.
Yeah.
But I think it's more especially are the haze things, because the haze is really something something different. And it's also, for me, as the owner of the Super Sativa Seed Club, it's sometimes funny that people tell me things that I myself even don't know, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
you can imagine that, because we had a lot of different varieties, and for us it's different than for the collectors, you know?
Oh, and sure.
It's really, but I really like it to hear that a lot of people are still trying to find the roots from cannabis, you know, because it's basically...
Absolutely.
It's basically even Neville. He of course did a bit more than we did, and because he was really the first one, and we were the second ones, and it's all hats off for Neville. He's not anymore with us, and you know.
I was friends with him. Yeah.
So it's it's a pity, but the nice thing is also that we got some of his last work in clone form.
Good.
Yeah, we have the Outback Haze. That's the one he made in Australia when he lived in Australia.
Yeah, Kangativa. Ian made all those for him.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It was one of my good friends. We were all working together during that time.
Okay. Yeah. And then we also have the Haze C.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's all. And we have also the NL5 times Haze.
Oh, good.
The clone that he selected him from a lot of plants. I really don't know.
So like I think it's the A5 or C5? A5?
The A5 and the C5 we also have.
But you do have those too?
Yeah. But because that's the thing special. Is. I'm from Holland, and in the south of Holland, there is a group of people who still have all those things, and they in the haze world, it's still a little bit nobody owns this, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, people think they do.
This is like we are like. Activists, you know, we think I don't believe in owning grains and ownings.
Absolutely. I agree.
Not everybody agrees with this, but
no, not everybody does agree with that.
When somebody puts a lot of effort in breeding a strain or working a strain like many years, then I consider it that he owns it.
Yeah, correct. If it's long bred and selected and a lot of work put into it. Right now, Gorilla Glue is going after everyone.
Yeah, and also at the point when somebody is selling in a seed bank, a regular seed.
Yeah.
Then I own it as well if he sells it to me. I think.
Yeah, exactly. If you're buying the genetics, right?
Yeah, because and if you don't want to sell the genetics, you have to feminize it or whatever.
And even then, I mean, if someone feminizes your feminized seeds, then you're just that shit out of luck because you've sold it.
Yeah. So I'm not really busy in protecting the genetics and.
Sure.
And then because I also want to ask your questions, of course.
Yeah.
Because do we see things happening in the States like that people are trying to protect strains or genetics?
Yeah. People are trying to patent feminization techniques that they had nothing to do with creating. People are trying to patent strains as quickly as they can, trademark strain names like Goji Kush.
Names, but names, it's a different thing. Because
yeah, names different. But the plant varieties, we can't patent them yet. But there are many people at the forefront of that trying to get it the second that it happens. And it'll be a problem. It'll definitely be a problem.
What are they trying to do then? Because in Holland, you have like... because we have a lot of horticulture, flowers and everything. Sure. And you can patent, or you can own a strain. As long as it is different in a lot of aspects than any other strain.
Sure.
And the second thing you have to do, you have to be able to reproduce it.
Uh-huh.
And that means if you have 100 seeds of this strain, all the plants have to be the same.
Uniform. So an IBL.
Uniform. And also, and if the next time you show them, they have to be the same again.
Yeah. I don't think anyone in the U.S., except for maybe CSI Humboldt,
with Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah. And a few others. 707 Seed Bank. There's only probably two or three people who are capable of even producing seed lines like that, let alone. So I don't think many people are really going to be getting the patents. There's some breeders up in BC that have been doing it very seriously and big for a long time that'll probably... be looking for that in their country.
Because to give you an example, if you like in Holland, we have a lot of big seed companies, tomato seeds and everything.
Yeah.
And if you buy a kilo of tomato seeds, you're buying 50,000 seeds. And if you grow those 50,000 plants, they are all 100% the same.
Yeah, uniform.
Uniform. Exactly. And there is not one marijuana strain around that it's uniform, you know?
No, it's and I don't know that marijuana can be brought to uniformity because environment takes such a big factor in expression.
And also, of course, because of the multiple hybrids.
Exactly, the polyhybrids.
I know for sure that in the cookies, there is something from us.
Oh, yeah, I guarantee it.
And for sure, there is some skunk number one in it.
Yep.
Because Sam the Skunkman always told me everything.
I think we know exactly what cookies is now. It's a simple little thing. But to break it down to its base components, it's going to be something like skunk one, Afghani one, like yeah, super dumb types.
And I like it. I really like it, the smell and the taste. And I really want to say good work by guys who did to the guys who did it.
Yeah, it was an accident.
But it is of course difficult to make this uniform because in the cookies, let's say the cookies, there are maybe like 25 different varieties.
Oh yeah, easy
for sure.
Yeah.
And those for like the skunk number one is already those already have like 5-6 different varieties in it.
Yes, and then you bring in more parents with all their backgrounds and grandparents, and then it's just a polyhybrid mix.
The hybridization is like there are 1 million strains.
Yeah,
I think
exactly. I try to keep it to the when in my work, I like to keep it to a baseline, like a base Afghani or a base. Something like that, you know, and cross it to it may be a polyhybrid. So it brings that down dramatically, you know, like it's easier to breed and line breed from it and select. Yeah.
And at the Super Sativa Seed Club, we are not really putting a lot of efforts in inbreeding and everything because what we like is when I buy seeds, I like to do pheno hunting.
Yeah.
And pheno hunting, that's the nice thing. When we make a cross with our haze, then you will find a lot of different things. And one of the plants is really something special, you know.
Oh, sure.
And that's right. That's what I like. And the big LPs, they try to sell to buy seeds, and then they think then we have a uniform crop. But I always tell them, please, man, do pheno hunting and look for a nice mother and go from there.
Yeah. Because so I have a quick question for you. There's been some myths and stories over the years. One of the stories that came up recently and someone made a seed company off of was saying that they were breeding for you in Virginia to make your skunk one.
No, that's not true.
That's not true. I didn't think it was true, but I had to ask because it's a lot of people.
The thing that Sam the Skunk Man, he made the skunk number one, and he made it in California, and he was really the first guy in the world to grow in a big greenhouse and to do real breeding, you know.
Yeah.
And basically the skunk number one, the original one, is. There are basically two phenotypes, one with the pointed bud and one with the round bud. And the smell and the taste, they were all really quite uniform.
Sure.
And that was his work. And in Holland in those days, all the breeding was done with skunk number one because it gave you a big, thick bud. And it was really... It's skunk number one in the 80s and the 90s was in every plant in the world.
Yeah. Can we ask you the history on Beatrix Choice? Because, again, you brought it up earlier and it's one that people like. Is there a certain history on it?
No, not really. The only thing is, to be honest, I even don't remember.
It's been a long time.
The cross that we made. The only thing is that we remember why we put the name on it. That's what I remember.
What was the name from?
Yeah, because it's Beatrix is the Queen of Holland.
Yes.
And so we thought in those days, we like your T-shirt, man. We were like this in those days. And we had one, Victor Barn. Do you know Victor Barn?
Victor Barn, yeah.
Yeah, that's a nice story to tell because in those days, we had in Holland the Lockheed affair. And the Lockheed, that was the company who built airplanes.
Oh, Lockheed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and the Lockheed. So our the husband of our queen was Prince Bernard.
Okay.
And he was like a naughty guy. He was he had a lot of different wives and he was doing a lot of different things. And he made a deal with Lockheed and he said, "I will make sure that the Dutch government is going to buy your airplanes."
Okay. But
you have to pay me $10 million for this. And Lockheed he did that. But has this Prince Bernard had to use a fake name to open a bank account to put to let Lockheed put this $10 million on this bank account.
Yeah.
And he used the fake name Victor Baden.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know that.
So that was like a little bit like this with them, you know.
Yeah, I love that.
You're telling that we can't grow wheat, and you're doing this kind of things.
Yeah, I'm very politically active here. Our government is very, especially in California. Certain areas of California are still very illegal. Like a lot of people don't know that. Like they think legal state. I'm in a part of California that's the Bible Belt. So despite any laws, our county has overridden the laws. Yeah. And if you get caught growing, you're fucked. You go to fucking jail. You're done. You know, so we're still very politically active here trying to fight a lot of that. And everything's still done very clandestine black market in most of the states.
Okay. Yeah. I know. I'm very good friends with the people of Humboldt Seeds. And they always tell me, everybody thinks it's legal, but it's not legal at all.
Yeah, it's scary. Scary in some places.
So now for me, the circle is a little bit round because I started this thing more or less. And now I'm very happy that I'm part of the group that got the permit to grow legal in Holland, you know.
Yeah.
For me, it's like the circle is round.
So what you just saw there was you saw the first part of our interview with Karel from Super Sativa Seed Club. Matt, I wasn't unable to make it. So Matt did the first one. We had a series of follow-up questions and ideas. And so Karel was kind enough to come back and chat with us again. It's possible this might be ongoing. But for now, we have a two-part series. So the first was Matt. The second will be primarily me, although Matt might be in it for a minute. And after that, we'll have some commentary where we talk about what we learned and what we were excited about hearing. Matt and I, and a lot of others, we read the catalogs, we talk and talk about various things, but we're all a little younger to have actually experienced, like, basically you and the seed bank kind of starting off, like,
Oh, this one. Okay.
Nice. Kind of like, you know, you and Neville at the seed bank, you two kind of started off what we consider to be like the modern seed era, right? Like before you, we were really curious as to like certain questions, you know, for instance, you mentioned before, when did you first start seeing like Americans come in and bringing their seed lines, like Skunk One and the Durban or Afghani One or these different things?
Yes. We started in 85 and after 1 year or so, this Sam the Skunk Man, he came to Holland to live in Holland. And he wrote us a letter because we were running an advertisement in High Times magazine. And Neville and the Seed Bank did it as well. So Sam thought, yeah, when I go to Holland, let's hook up with those two guys and let's talk about seeds. And I told Matt last time, in those days, we didn't have much seeds. The only seeds we had were from bags of seeds that we bought in the coffee shops, and it was all sativas. And Sam the Skunk Man brought all the seeds from the US to Amsterdam. And of course, the next one was Robert Connell Clark, a friend of Sam the Skunk Man. And after that, a few more came. And the nice thing about it is the seeds came from the U.S. to Amsterdam. Then we started to send it to the U.S. again. And now it's again that we look into the U.S. To buy seeds again from you guys. It's we were first more liberal than you were. In '85, it never has been legal to grow in Holland, but in '85, in the beginning, not a lot of people knew about cannabis, and they. So basically, we could do what we want because nobody knew about it, and nobody, even the police, didn't really take. They let us do what we wanted to do, you know. And in Amsterdam, there were a few more. Bernard Bruining, of course, he was really the first one with the seed bank, but he didn't ship seeds international. It was only for Holland, and he was really. He's older than me as well, and he also started the first coffee shop, mm-hmm. and the first grow shop.
Is it the Positronics you're referring to?
The Positronics, yeah. And then the coffee shop is the Mellow Yellow, and he's still around. He invented more or less not the Rick Simpson oil, but. I don't know. He calls it Medi-Wheat oil. And he has a good, he really does a lot of good work because he basically introduced to the Dutch patients how to make your own oil.
That's because awesome.
He wants to teach the people how to do it. He wants that everybody's independent from pharmaceuticals. You need to make your own medicine. I fully agree with it.
Yes.
So he's still around. And to come back to the question, Sam the Skunk Man, he's really the man who brought everything to Amsterdam, really. Yeah.
Did you have any interactions with Kees Hocker from Lowland Seeds?
No. Kees Hocker, he's older already.
No.
Because the thing is, they try to push the, as we call it, the native wheat, basically grow in your own backyard. And we were more, we thought, the Dutch weather is too cold and too rainy and too wet, and let's go indoors because we saw it. We saw it happening in the U.S. and we were. We were readers of High Times magazine.
Yeah.
And we were lucky enough to have the American bookstore in The Hague where we live. So we went there every month to buy the newest copy.
And
we saw what in America was going on. And that's more or less how we started.
For us, Skunk One and Haze and those type of things are very, very famous strains, and they kind of became like the backbone of what you guys were doing over there for a while. What was it like to grow those things at first?
We were very happy, especially with the Skunk Number One, because we were not used to see this kind of big buds and stable genetics, because you can imagine if you grow outdoors at all. Sativa strain from the Ecuador. It doesn't flower. It flowers in December, and in December it's cold and rain and snow. So we didn't see, we never ever have seen even buds, you know. So this was a big game changer when he came with his stuff, and especially the Skunk Number One and the Haze. He gave us 10 seeds, the last seed he saved from his favorite variety, and he gave the other 10 seeds to Neville. And
step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Yeah, we didn't pay too much attention to the haze because it was long flowering and only very, very small bits. And it was really, we were so happy with the Skunk Number One that we almost forgot about the haze. Luckily enough, we made crosses between Skunk Number One and haze.
Yeah.
Because we had 10 plants and Yeah, two times we were busted by the police, and they took all our hazes, and we had only one left. I even don't know anymore if it was a boy or a girl.
But oh man,
we already made the seats with skunk number one. Mm-hmm. And I still have a lot of sheets that we made between crosses between our 10 hazes. Mm-hmm. But I tried to germinate it, and it really doesn't work anymore. The problem was I kept them outside the refrigerator for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I put them in the refrigerator, and I still have them. So maybe some of your listeners...
Yeah, tissue culture.
Yeah, because in my opinion, a seed, when there is only one cell alive still,
yeah,
basically you could reproduce it. But if the government, I don't think they want to help us with this one.
Yeah. But,
if they find a seed of wheat in a pyramid in Egypt,
yeah,
they'll make sure that this is going to work again.
Oh, yeah.
But with cannabis seeds, we still have to find somebody who can help us, because I think you know what I mean.
Tissue cultures.
Become alive somewhere in those seeds still, and of course it would be nice to germinate it. I gave it to a few people who told me, we will manage because I know how to do it, but no,
yeah,
never.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a pity, of course. And to come back to your German poison.
Yeah.
In those days, we had in Amsterdam a coffee shop. It was called the German poison.
And, oh, wow.
The only thing they sold was wheat from South Africa. I don't remember the names anymore, but the major thing they sold was German poison. And mm-hmm. That's also why we had quite a few crosses in our first catalog with German poison, because we bought wheat from them, and we picked out seeds. And together with skunk number one, all the crosses with skunk number one gave us more early flowering, bigger mm-hmm. roots, and a nice smell. So it was basically a winner combination, a sativa with the skunk number one.
Well, do you remember what any of the smell profiles of the different skunk number ones that you popped back in the day were like?
Yeah, the skunk number one was really like the name tells it all. It stinks like skunk.
Oh, so back then it actually smelled like skunks, like North American skunks.
Yeah, I really, to be honest, I never have smelled skunk anymore. But it was more about that it was so strong. It was really strong, you know.
Yeah.
In my local haze that I have, you can still smell in the back. You smell the skunk, the strong smell of the skunk number one.
Yeah.
And then together with the haze, it gives you like there's a lot. The old school haze is a very funny plant, because if you make an analysis of it, there's only terpene. That's the only terpene that's in it.
Yeah.
And not too much as well. But if you smoke it, it's really the strongest smell and taste that I have ever seen in wheat.
So yeah,
that's a big mystery still in our knowledge about terpenes. How is it possible that a plant with only one terpene and not a lot of it can smell so strong and taste so strong?
Yeah.
Do you know the answer? I don't know.
I don't know.
So basically, when you first got it, it was skunk number one was an early finishing, big bud. Very pretty. It smelled like a skunk.
Yeah.
Did it smell like citrus too?
No, not at all. It was more the dark side of the like the earthy, woody. Yes. It was not any sweetness. Not any citrus in it. No.
Because what we're familiar with as younger people is skunk number one smells like floral. It smells sweet. It smells. So you're saying that what Sam brought over first is very different than what ended up being common in Europe later as skunk
yes.
number one.
Yes, yeah. Because skunk number one, there are still a lot of seeds bank around. and they think or they know, I don't know, that they still have skunk number one, but there is no skunk number one anymore. The only skunk number one that is around is very diluted, nothing to compare with the skunk number one anymore. Maybe when Sam the Skunk Man listens, he tells that I'm wrong, but I have never seen it. There is no skunk. There is no real skunk number one anymore around. No.
That's interesting, because when he went there, he gave seeds to you. He gave some seeds to Neville. It yes. sounds like he gave some seeds to Wernard from Positronics, Mellow Yellow. What was the community in Amsterdam then? Did everyone know each other?
Because yes, yes. The thing is, we didn't live in Amsterdam. We still don't live in Amsterdam. And there wasn't the Amsterdam scene was more about outdoor growing. I think we were the first ones in Holland to grow indoors. And when Sam taught a lot of people how to grow in a greenhouse. And since Sam arrived in Holland, people started to grow in greenhouses because you could do it without a lot of trouble because nobody knew about how it smells and how it looks. And The first 5 years that Sam was around, a lot of greenhouse growing was going on, and he basically taught everybody in Holland how to do it. And we didn't grow in a greenhouse because, in our opinion, we thought better to do it indoors and nobody can see it, and it's more safe to do it. But that, because at the end of the day, all the greenhouses were always busted. They could do one crop, maybe second crop was already busted. Because Holland is a small country, and there is no countryside at all. The greenhouses are always close to a village, close to a town, with a lot of people around. Holland is a lot of people live in one square mile. It's really greenhouse.
I mean, half the country, it seems like you reclaim from the sea. You know, So, besides Hayes and Skunk, what else did you get from Sam?
No, we did not get anything else. Neville, he got like early pearl.
Early pearl from Rob.
Yeah, early pearl and a few other ones, but also we were not too much in touch with Neville because Neville's approach was different than our approach. We were underground people, and we were not really too fun to receive a lot of people we don't know in our house. And in those days, Neville had the. The cannabis castle, and everybody more or less was welcome over there. And especially when you came with a lot of money to buy seeds, everybody was welcome. And we were always more like, let's try to keep it underground, and let's try to do it in a more or less safe way, because we didn't want to get caught, and we wanted to go on in this business for forever, you know. And Neville was more a daredevil, and he was like, I don't know who came to his house anymore. I really don't know if he knew. I don't think so. You know, because a lot of Americans in those days, they came to Amsterdam, and everybody was welcome at Neville's place. we were more careful too.
Besides Sam, where were some other sources? I in the previous conversation you had with Matt, you told that a lot of stuff you were getting off seeds from buds out of coffee shops. Were yes. there any other people or sources once you started making Super Sativa Seed Club? Were people coming to find you and trade seeds with you?
Yeah, but they were coming to find this, but they couldn't find this.
Okay.
the only one who could find this was Ed Rosenthal and George Cervantes and the chief editor of High Times,
Stephen Hager.
Stephen Hager, of course. Yeah. And those were the only three people who could visit us, because we were really like, we knew what we were, we understood what we were doing, you know?
So then that leads me to another question. In your catalog, you have something called Oakland Indica.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious as to where you got that or where it came from. Do you know?
I don't know it, because a few times, because we had a lot of clients, of course, and we received a lot of letters in those days. And a few times people sent us seeds, but not only a few times. And I think because Oakland, that it was somebody from Oakland, because in those days we got like 100 letters every day, you know, and it was really fun for us to read all those letters. And also we asked people to help us to distribute the seeds in the US, and we were just reading the letters, and we thought, oh, this guy is a nice guy because he understands how it works, and he understands. So it was a really a nice job for me to read all these letters and to answer them as well, because we even nowadays still get letters from people from the old days, and they said, ah, nice to see you back, and do you remember that we bought this and that from you?
Oh, of course.
So that's really, really funny. And when we started again a few years ago, we got a letter from somebody, and he says, nowadays Mother Nature is legal in the U.S. And then we really thought, a guy who writes a letter and says, Mother Nature is legal now, you know?
Yeah. So
it used to be illegal, but now we are happy that it's legal. And those were the letters that we really liked, of people who understood how crazy it is to make Mother Nature illegal.
Yeah, it is wild.
Yeah.
So what do you got about the Durban Tie High Flyer? Now, that was one of your most famous lines. Yeah. We still see it around today. Do you have any memories surrounding it?
Yeah, this was a very sativa, pure sativa, of course. And also, because of Durban is so in the south of the world, that it's almost in the same latitude than Holland is, but in the north. So the flowering times, they are more or less the same than our flowering time, because our harvest, our autumn starts in September.
Yeah.
And then also the winter, in harvest, it's getting colder. So we were lucky to have the Durban flowering so early.
The Durban is the one sativa that's sort of an early finisher.
Yeah.
So it worked well in Holland.
Yes, and the combination with the Thai, because the Thai is a very, very late flowering.
Yeah.
Then it's finished so like half October or something, and that's nice for us, of course. Because in October, sometimes when you're lucky, the weather is still good. Yeah. But our main customers in the U.S. were the people from California, the Vietnam veterans. People that flew back from Vietnam, they started to do the guerrilla farming, and they really, they made money with it as well. So they sent us a nice amount of money.
Well, I mean, from our perspective, back then, especially indicas and things like that were pretty rare.
Yeah.
And even though California and America, there was a lot of things going on. People didn't know each other. So really, like, one of the most interesting things about what happened with you guys for us is that, like you were saying before, a bunch of stuff flowed from America over to Holland.
Yeah.
And went everywhere in America.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It went to the South. It went to the New York. It went to the Midwest. Yes.
back. And that was our goal. That was our goal. Because that's why we did this. Because we thought in those days, there is no internet. So your friends live close to you in the same town. So you can swap sheets with your friends. But it doesn't spread the whole country, you know. And since we were starting, we got letters from everywhere. Alaska, Texas, whatever. And so we thought when all the refrigerators in the States are filled with seeds, it's a difficult thing to stop it, this movement.
No. What about the Creeper or the Khyber Pass?
Yeah, the creeper. We called it the Creeper because it was really the plant was not upright, but it was laying down more or less.
That's why I always assumed it was the high, but it was
No. It was not about the high. It was really about the morphologic aspects of the plant, because normally a plant is like more or less like a Christmas tree, but this one was like bending over and laying down, you know. And I still like this kind of plants because they give you a big harvest.
Yeah, they get wide. There's
room for buds, you know. And and the Khyber, that was we crossed it with an Afghani, I think. Yes. Because Afghani, in Holland, the hash from Afghanistan was really very popular. And I don't know where we got the seeds from, but...
Did you guys ever grow flowers for coffee shops, or did you just focus on seeds?
Yes. We did. Yeah. Because we were growing for the coffee shops as well. Yeah. Because they liked our indoor wheat because it was new, and in those days we were worrying a little bit about the fact that our wheat was green. Because people were used to buy marijuana was always brown, so half rotten wheat, as we call it now, and our indoor marijuana was green, so we thought, oh, nobody's going to buy this because they don't, because green, the only green marijuana we knew was the Neder wheat, and that was the wheat that we grew in our backyard. And it didn't have buds, it was only leaves, and it was green. So we were afraid that people thought our wheat was a Neder wheat. So we tried to make it brown to be able to sell it. But after a few, I don't know, maybe after a year, everybody said, no, the green one is the best one. It's much better than the brown one. No, man, don't worry about the color. We buy it anyway. That was a really funny thing. Yeah, that we were really worried about the green color.
They were really worried because it was so. Because the part about that is that everything was so new.
Yeah. Yes. That was new. It was new, and the first Sinsemilia that I saw in Holland, that was somebody. Then one year, we were lucky enough to have a good September in Holland. Normally, it's raining in September already, but in this September, there was a lot of sun. So in the coffee shop where I worked, somebody came with a garbage bag full of big buds, and they were not trimmed at all. And then I thought, where does this come from? Because this, we really didn't. It was the first time we saw a green big bud plant, but this was also, I think, a Durban poison or something, that he was lucky to grow some Durban poison seeds in a year that we had a very good, nice September. So the plant was able to finish. And that was really the first time that I saw Sinsemilia, as we call it in Spain.
One you got into weed was by working in a coffee shop?
Yes, I worked in a coffee shop when I was like 18 years or 19 years old. And then one of our customers came to me and he said, I'm a reader of High Times magazine, and I saw how they grow plants already, because Ed Rosenthal was one of the first to start all this, I think, in the US. And this guy said, I bought a metal halide lamp because we have a big horticulture centrum here in Holland. And in those days, the greenhouse grower, they used it to grow cacti, the metal halides. And he went there to buy a lamp. And he said, I want to grow, I want to start to use it. And I thought, I live in a squat house and let's do it. So that's how it started. Because this guy, he was a reader of High Times magazine. He saw it in High Times.
So when you, most of Super Sativa Seed Club's work was all done indoors, whether you were growing buds for coffee shops or whether you were making seed for your.
Yes. Yeah. We did everything.
You kept it inside.
Yeah. And that was all because of, it's too cold in Holland, you know, and in a greenhouse, Holland is too crowded to grow in a greenhouse. And it's, everybody got caught always in the greenhouse. So
were you growing it? Did you have garages? Were you growing in bedrooms?
No, we had garage and we bought a house specially to do it. And we were squatters, eh? You know what squatters are?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And if you are a squatter, you always have a house, eh? Yeah.
So you squatted in the house and then you set up some lights and you set up some rooms to do breeding and grow weed, and you sold the weed to the coffee shops and you sold seeds. Catalog.
And we were squatters, but we earned a lot of money.
That's very cool.
We were not in it for the money, man. But it was nice to have money. That a lot of money came to us, of course. But it was not really our the basic thing.
The funny thing for us is that now, there's so many seed companies in America and there's a lot of seed companies in Europe and everything like that. But when you guys started and when Neville started, there was really only you two out there that was easy. Like you said, if you went to Positronics, if you went to Holland and went directly to certain coffee shops, maybe you could get some seed. Yeah. But in order to order things, there was only two.
Yes,
really. That's right. And so that your company stuff and Neville's company stuff got spread so far and wide.
Yeah. But when Neville stopped, Sensi Seeds took over. And they bought basically. That's how Sensi Seeds started. They bought Neville stock, and then they started in the name Sensi Seeds, and the Ben Dronkers, the one that's the guy who started this. This is really a big thanks to Ben, because he was really the guy with the biggest balls, you know. He went on where we stopped.
So do you think that did Neville sell his company to Ben and Alan because of the trouble he got in?
I think so. Yeah.
Did you, in the community back then, was it a small enough community that you were close to a lot of these people?
Yes. But the thing is, I said before, we were not really, we had our own group of people and we didn't live in Amsterdam, you know, so.
You didn't live in Amsterdam. You lived in different.
Yeah. We lived in The Hague. It's close to Amsterdam, but so we tried to stay out of the all those groups.
Tried to keep your head and stay quiet. And
That was the idea. Yeah, really. And we were not like behaving like rock stars or something. We were just squatters running a cannabis seed business.
So how did like Jorge Cervantes and Ed Rosenthal, how did they find you? Did they write you?
They sent us a letter. Yeah, they wrote it. Because in those days, you wrote letters to people.
Sure. Yeah.
And you put a stamp on the envelope and you put it in the mailbox. That was maybe it's a good idea that we go back to this kind of communication again. Because nobody can listen to it.
Yeah. Did they bring seeds too, or did they want to just come out?
No, they didn't bring seeds. No. But I have a nice anecdote about George Cervantes, because he came to visit us and he asked us to show around to show him the Dutch greenhouses, because in those days the Dutch greenhouses they were growing under a metal under HPS lights. That we had greenhouses with 10,000 HPS lights in it, and he didn't ever see this. And so we gave him a tour, and he came up, he showed up in the tour with a nice T-shirt, cannabis, USA, California. And said, hey, no, that's not how it goes. You have to put put on some different T-shirt, man, because we can't show you around in the greenhouse wearing this T-shirt. And he said, oh, why that? It's legal in Holland, isn't it? No, it's not legal at all. Everybody thinks it's legal, but it is not legal. So we had to teach him a little bit how to behave in Holland.
We had the same issue in California, where I live. When medical first happened 20 years ago, a lot of people thought it was legal, but it really wasn't legal. It was kind of like Holland. It was permitted, but you could still get in trouble anytime.
Because I know a lot of people from California, and they always tell me it's still illegal, man.
It's
illegal.
It was still whether or not the cop wanted to be nice to you. Yeah. They could treat you any which way they wanted, and it was kind of the same about Holland, I'm sure too. It all depended on the attitude.
And that's why we try to keep it a little bit underground, because of we wanted to go out with this, and I wanted to. I'm having a family and everything, and I was really. I'm not that type of guy who wants to be in the big pictures.
me either. I feel you on that. So after you started breeding at Super Sativa Seed Club for a while and you realized that you got popular, did you start keeping a lot of breeding males and breeding females?
Basically we had like a nice collection of males and females. And in those days we did not do the feminized breeding that didn't exist yet. Sure. So it was not so very difficult, the breeding that we did. So we sometimes did a little bit inbreeding but not too much. It was more we basically did pheno hunting, and the best ones we liked we crossed with each other, and and everybody was happy with the seeds, because for a lot of people our customers was, it's either nothing or something from Amsterdam that really gives you nice flowers, nice buds. And then people sent us photos and sent us letters, and they were really, the photos they sent us, they were really nice photos, and everybody was happy. It was really nice.
So how many people were involved in your company?
Yeah, we were two people, like four or five people helping us.
Yeah. Like a little collective. At the biggest part of it, how many houses did you have, or how many different places were you growing?
Like five, six different places to grow. But we did not do the because in those days there were also people who really after 5 years or so, a lot of people came into they rented big warehouses and put 200 lamps in it. But we did it on a smaller scale, because we were not growing that much wheat. We were more growing seeds in those days.
I mean, there's a lot of, you could call them American seed companies these days, that exist just like that. It's some basement. It's a few bedroom house.
I can answer that. Yeah, because I see a lot of people. They have some clones and they make crosses, and a new seed company is born.
Yeah, your skunk haze.
Yes.
Really old.
Yeah.
How long does it flower for?
12 weeks. And then the better do it 1 week of 13 weeks. 13 is better. Yeah.
And how did it, I mean, 35 years old, I'm always fascinated by how things survive because for us in America, it seems like every 5 or 10 years, the seed game reinvents itself and you can't get what you used to be able to get. So, was it just such a nice cut and there's such a nice plant that various people saved it and passed it around? Is it something
it has been always in like 2 or 3 places? And like you said, it was more like a group of people we worked with. And it's still around. And we let them, we have our mother plant when it's like 3 or 4 months old. We take a new cut. We throw away the old plant and we start from with a little clone again. And a few friends of me, of my, they have it. And because you can imagine in 35 years, there are lots of things happening. So really, we are proud of it to still have it. And we are now working on trying to breed it. We are working with a few American varieties because we like the from those days. We like the big, firm buds with a lot of resin.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it lacks a little bit of flavor, a little bit of taste and smell. And now we are trying to put the smell of the old school haze and the high, preferable as well. And the taste into a new and into the American varieties, and that takes a while. But it's really interesting to see a plant that grows like a cookie or something,
mm-hmm.
American style, and then with the old school haze taste and smell in it. That's a thing that we are working on, and maybe people. Some people tell me, why do you do this? You try to keep it like it is. But I want to, because at the end of the day, a lot of people are growing commercial these days. And it's nice to have a big yield, of course. But also, a fluffy bud is nowadays considered like B quality. A lot of people don't understand that at the end of the day, you crumple your bud. You put it in a paper and you smoke it. So it isn't really a big deal how the bud looks.
I agree.
The big deal is the taste and how it works. But you agree and I agree, but a lot of people, the eye also wants something, you know?
Yes. So I mean, with and the way that social media works now, a lot of times the only things that people see of different buds are pictures.
Yeah. And so
but these bud might look very ugly, even though it might work wonderfully and make you very happy and it might taste great. You can't tell that through the picture.
Yeah. You know? Because nowadays, if you have five different varieties, and 4 of them are American things, and 1 of them is a sativa thing, and everybody says, "Oh, the sativa thing. We don't want to have it because it looks strange for us."
It's strange,
and especially because I'm 63 years old already. So, normally, I think it's normal that the younger people like other things, but we also want to show things from the past.
Oh, yeah. For instance, you know, it's really interesting because for us, Skunk One, you know, to bring it back again, is very, very, very different from what you experienced. I don't think I experienced Skunk One like you remember it.
No.
The time that we got a hold of it, what you remember was gone.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot where if you don't have old things or people aren't saving old cuttings or you can't get old seeds to sprout, then the way people remember something, it's just gone. How long ago did you get excited again about maybe you could restart Super Sativa Seed Club in a new form?
Yeah, but we already started it, but we don't sell in the US anymore. Because those were the wild days. Yeah, nowadays it's not a good idea to sell something in the US from Holland.
No, not yet. It could change. We're slowly moving in that direction, but
because I don't know. Have you ever heard of Dutch Passion?
Yes.
Yeah, because we work together with Dutch Passion. These are friends of us, and they are. This is really a very successful seed company, but they don't sell one seed in the US. And if you know that half of the visitors of their website comes from the US.
Yeah.
But we don't sell one seed over there.
Hopefully that will change in the next or so years.
Yeah.
It looks like America.
It's still too complicated in the US, man, with those federal laws. And it's really not a good idea. And no. No, but maybe one day things change, and then we can because it's of course crazy that half of the visitors of a website it comes from the US.
Yeah,
they want to buy seeds, but we don't do it.
Oh, yeah, I understand. basically you're making stuff for the Holland market now.
European market for European market. Good.
You were talking in the previous interview you did with Matt, you were talking about how you sort of like recollected some other hazes besides.
Because now I'm in a good position, of course, to I know a lot of people, and I know all the haze heads from Europe, you know.
No, I mean, you're certainly of that generation that, you know, probably known these people for decades.
Yes, yes, and we are happy that the haze people always are the people who really understand how important it is to save things, and there is still a lot of stuff around, you know, because we have like five different loans still, and other people.
Which ones are they?
We have the old school haze, we have the NL5 times haze, and we have the haze C. And the haze A, and it's not a boy as everybody thinks, but because we have the girls, and we have the Outback haze. That's the last thing Neville made.
The last thing made. So yeah. the haze C, the famous boy.
Yeah, no. The thing is, there is a lot of confusion going on always about the haze's boys and girls. But what we have is the haze A and the haze C, and it's both girls. And it's really, of course, you have the A5 and C5. I personally don't have it, but my friends have it. And it's really, when we want to use it to make a cross or something, we can have it. But it's a group of people and everybody knows each other. It's from the south of Holland.
But when you're talking about the girls that are A and C, you're not talking about A5 or C5. You're talking different. No.
That's different plants, yeah. And it's really the, especially the haze. The one I like best is the Outback haze.
The Outback haze.
Yeah, because the Outback haze is really the incense smell, and it has the incense smell, and it's it makes you high, totally high. It's really when you smoke it, then you think, I'm not stoned at all. And then half an hour later, you think, "Huh, where was I?" I didn't do anything, but where was I?
That's a female you got from friends, or is that a female and seed?
I don't think you know them. She's called Miska. Miska is a famous activist here in Europe. She's from France. Okay. It's an older lady, and she's really an activist. And she was the best friend of Neville. And Neville gave this to her. And since she passed away, Neville passed away. Yeah, she gave it to us also because she's older. She's quite old already. And then it's like what Sam did. You gave it to somebody who can handle it, you know, who knows how to save it.
Are you planning on doing some breeding with some of these?
Yeah, we are doing breeding because we are now doing breeding, but that's feminized breeding. Because when you have two girls, there is no man, there is no male. So you, you need to do feminized breeding. And we have now, they have two. And still, yeah, I think it's going to be a successful project. Because we when you're breeding, you have to establish a few girls. Girls already, not too much. But our goals are always the high, the smell, and the taste.
Those are my top three.
Yeah. If you get a nice bud. Of course, it's nice when there is a lot of resin to be seen. But we don't go for flowering time or something. No, no. Because now we also can do some breeding in legal situations. So then we don't have to worry about the flowering time.
Right.
Yeah, because a lot of people, DNA genetics, you know them, of course.
Yes.
Maybe they are also friends of us, and they said, yeah, it's nice what you're doing, but it's going to be a problem to sell those seeds, because in those nowadays, people don't want to spend 12 weeks, 13 weeks waiting for their harvest anymore.
It's changing.
I hope so, because when you're growing legal, like you guys can do this there, why should you bother about the flowering time?
Yes. No, it's for a long time, they were right. People didn't want things that went longer than 8 to 10 weeks.
Yeah, because they have to run with the police on their heels and yes, to make sure that it comes in fast.
But there's a lot of people now that are willing to do 12, 13, even 14 week strains if they're nice enough. Yeah. People are getting excited about it.
And also regarding weight, the extra 3 weeks will give you 40% extra weight.
Right.
The best yielding varieties are the sativa varieties. And we all laugh a little bit about we're sometimes making a little bit fun about the new American strains. We like them, but they don't yield.
No, there's a lot of them that don't yield. That's very true.
Of course. Yeah. So
they don't. So your skunk haze, the haze in it is from one of the 10 seeds that Neville, Sam, okay,
a long there time is nothing, ago. There is nothing closer to the real haze than the skunk haze that I have.
Because most people, it seems like most people in Holland ended up using a lot of Neville's hybrids of haze. And yes, those would be a lot of the cuts that got saved.
Yes.
But as a result of that, that means that most haze is only from one or two plants.
Yes.
So yes, you have haze that's not even his, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, because the difference between our haze and Neville's hazes, Neville did all his crosses with Northern Lights. And we did it at Skunk number one.
Mm-hmm.
And Northern Lights, that's, you can also see in like A5 and C5 and all those, it's all haze with Northern Light in it. And Northern Light is not really a plant with a nice taste. It's like a metallic taste, and it's really not... There are not the turps in the crosses that Neville made are not so nice than the turps in the skunk haze, because the skunk was a really turpy plant. So we were ready that our line is with skunk number one, and Neville's lines are with northern lights, and Northern Lights came from the US.
Are there coffee shops and stuff like that where people can still get your skunk haze on any kind of basis?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's still available. Like if people were to go to, you could find it. Lucky.
But only a few people grow it because it's complicated to grow. Eh? Really need to have your climate under control. And in an illegal situation, it's not so very easy, because then you need to work with air units, you know, because the skunk haze, when the temperature rises above 28 Celsius, then they start to run the buds, and that means then it gets very fluffy, and sometimes you get like thin branches, and then you start again. And when this happens after 8 weeks of flowering, again, 12 weeks of flowering starts, and then it's, and we're talking about 20 weeks, and that's too much. Eh? That's what it's really a very difficult plant to grow. If you have too much nutrients, they start to stretch and they start to do crazy things.
So and, if you do it the right way, it takes 12 or 13 weeks.
Yeah. And then the right way is not 1 hour above 28 degrees Celsius. Not one day. No. When you have one day, when your air co breaks down or something, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
So what excites you about your new venture with Super Sativa Seed Club? Are you working with your son? Are you working with?
I'm working with my son. Yeah. I have two sons. We are very close to get the permit to grow in Holland legal. Yeah, because now the Dutch government issued 10 permits to grow legal for the coffee shops in Holland. And we were lucky enough to win the lottery. Because it was a lottery. 150 people applied for the license. And only 40 went through the first round, because you need to be able to grow a lot of wheat. You need to have money. You need to have the skills to do it. You need to have the contacts in the coffee shop. And we all have this. And then basically there were 40 people left, and then they made a lottery, and we were lucky enough to win one of the 10 permits.
So when you win it, does that mean that at some point in the future, like Matt and I could fly to Holland and we could buy Super Sativa Seed Club weed at coffee shop?
Yes.
And it would be branded, and we'd know it was from you, and you grew it legal facility, and then you'd sell it to like Damkring or somebody like that.
Yeah. That's the idea. Yes, that's the idea.
That's got to be very exciting.
Yeah. That's the idea. Yeah. We're still. It will take because now it's a government business, so it takes a little bit longer. You know, as you can imagine.
Sure.
We are waiting. But at one in a few weeks or months, we will get the permit, and then.
It's very
finally do it in a peaceful way, because
it's a lifetime of waiting for that, huh?
Yeah, because that, for me especially, it's very nice, because then the circle is round, you know.
Yeah, California is the same way. It's just become legal, but a lot of money, a lot of rules, a lot of regulations, a lot of government involved, a lot of permits.
Yeah. We were lucky enough to have the example of Canada and the U.S. to tell our government, if you want to make this a success, don't make the same mistakes as they did in Canada. So, because in Canada, people from the black market can't be involved in this. But here in Holland, we told the government, without people from the black market, this is not going to be successful.
No.
The people from the black market, they know how to do it. And basically, where does the government can get information from? You can't read the information about this kind of things in the paper. So you need to talk with people from the black market. We basically helped the government to make this happen.
You did. You worked with them.
Our government is wise enough to understand that they can do this without the black market.
So then if they make it legal, will you mostly be going in greenhouses like traditional?
We will do a combination of greenhouse and indoor growing.
And indoor growing.
All organic, eh? We work 100% organic, eh?
Yeah. You call it bio over there.
Yeah, it's bio here. Yeah, it's called bio.
Bio.
Yeah. So, and then the circle is round, and
So, I mean, if you want to wrap it up here, that's wonderful. I thank you so much for your time. It was wonderful to hear these stories.
Yeah, let's keep in touch.
You're an amazing interview, man. You know your shit. I love it. All right, that concludes Natsa's part of the interview. So right now we're going to go over some of the highlights of the interview, things that we picked out and thought were very, very unique and otherwise important to highlight. So let's talk about some things.
Well, probably in no particular order, but one of the really interesting parts for me was hearing him talk about the imported weed from South Africa, in Durban, and that, you know, you and I have talked a bunch in the past about how we thought most of the Durban in Amsterdam came from what Mel Frank gave to Sam Skunkman.
Sure. We thought that's what proliferated most of what was being used back then.
Right. And so while certainly that was proliferated over there and plenty of people sold it and bred with it.
Sure.
Now we find out that there was literally a Durban poison coffee shop that Carell and others were getting bag seeds from, seeded cannabis from Durban, and using in their own work. So it significantly widens the gene pool of what we thought. And it also could lead to where, you know, Mel talked extensively about how his Durban was much more anise, much more licorice in flavor. Mm-hmm. And he's not sure why the Dutch bred it in the way that they did.
Yeah.
But with that tidbit of information, it's possible that his was anise. And so there's an anise side to Durban, but then there's also a more terpenylene leaning Durban that came from South Africa and was found in seeded weed.
Yeah.
And that could account for the vast differences between those two Durban families. Because it's all kind of gotten the same classification. But as we know, just because it's from the same region doesn't mean it's remotely
the same.
Yeah. No, not whatsoever. So that was pretty amazing information, because us and others have assumed for a long time.
Yeah.
That most people were selling the same Durban poison.
Yeah, that was fascinating. One of the points that I thought was really interesting, and it's something that's been kind of mythical ever since SSSC kind of, you know, moved away from the scene, in that, you know, there was a lot of rumors building up about why that happened. There were people coming out and saying, I worked for SSSC and I was SSSC America, or my uncle, you know, or my uncles bred certain lines for SSSC in Virginia or somewhere in America. I thought that was fascinating to hear that there were no Americans involved in SSSC, because that's been a rumor that's built up, and a few companies have been started off that.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there's more than one person has had claims of that level. So it was interesting to hear that while they did source, stuff from America, like apparently, as we heard, Williams Wonder came from New York, which is pretty cool. I'd never heard that part before.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
And obviously he talked about all skunk coming from California and the Sam Rob group, you know, to them. But it does seem a little bit like Neville. They collected some things, and it was pretty cool how he talked about people would straight write him letters.
Yeah.
And that's how he made most of his American connections, was people like Ed or whoever writing them letters and wanting to come see them.
Can you imagine just being able to write in a letter being like, hey, I'd love to come visit. And all of a sudden, bam, you're there. You're at the cannabis castle.
People are sending in seeds or buds. So America certainly contributed to what they had to offer. But apparently, I mean, he said, you know, all their breeding was done in 5 or 6 homes, basically, you know, that type of thing. The other little tidbit that's not really like seed specific, but makes a lot of sense, was, you know, when he talked about how easy it was to get busted in greenhouses.
Yeah.
Because all of Holland is highly developed. And so a greenhouse is in a neighborhood.
Yeah. In a backyard.
And living in Mendocino County, and anybody that lives in the western part of America, we're pretty spread out.
Yeah.
There's lots of remote rural areas. There's lots of places you can do things. You can buy property where you can get away with it.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to, when you think of a society that's so much older than ours, and they've just populated every good part of the land.
Yeah.
And so there's really nowhere to hide. So for them, in order to not get busted, he basically said it was like you were one and done at most of those places.
One of my favorite parts was when you were interviewing him and he was talking about, maybe you can go over it a little bit more because you were doing the interview, but when he was talking about the green bud and not being able to sell green bud because it wasn't what they were used to.
Oh yeah. If you see my face on the video, I think my eyes are probably as big as saucers, because one of the things that's interesting in talking to, like, the, you know, what we've talked about is like the pioneer generation.
Yeah.
Like Rob Clark and some of these guys that were writing the Bible for breeding, is just how new it all was. Yeah. And so to think that in the mid 80s, as they first grew weed for themselves, that was the first time any of them had seen green bud.
Yeah.
Because brown and gold or red or various kinds of cure or whatever, that was the standard. There was no other kind.
Just oxidized.
They might not have even known that it looked that way when it was fresh.
Yeah. How wild is that?
And so they grow homegrown and it comes out the way homegrown does. And they're not even sure they're going to be able to sell it because no one's ever seen it.
I'm sure they didn't even know if it would get them high when they first looked at it, if it was so different, you know?
I mean, so that just goes to speak to the level of pioneering that they were trying to have to figure all this stuff out.
Yeah.
The other part that's just a little tidbit, but I found like endlessly amusing, honestly, is that obviously in American weed culture, we can kind of trace a lot of strains back, but then there's like a nickname, you know, where NL5 Skunk 1 doesn't stay that way. It gets nicknamed something else.
Sure.
Something maybe this NL5 Haze gets nicknamed Dog Shit or Electric Boogaloo or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have this whole countercultural thing in America of relating our strains to various pop culture stuff that's current for us, right?
Yeah.
And so to hear that whole story about Victor Barn.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
And the way that whose name it was and this hustle and how they had to have a name to deposit all these millions. Obviously not knowing Holland, you know, culture like that.
Yeah.
I never had any idea that that was related to anything like that, but it does tie in to the fact that weed people have always had kind of a knack to pick funny, tongue in cheek kind of names for weed.
Yeah, like Beatrix Choice, he said that was kind of like a fuck you to the Queen of Holland. That's fucking awesome. Yeah,
exactly.
So, how punk rock is that, you know?
So, both those things, both those names, that tradition has continued throughout the decades. People are always coming up with clever plays on the culture that they're in.
Yeah.
And so while, you know, Holland weed culture and American weed culture is obviously quite different, it was pretty neat to hear that we share that sort of, you know, and on top of that, too, I'll just say as a general sense, everything he said about his attitude towards weed and their approach towards things and all that, like, I pretty much agree with. I mean, it was obvious talking to him, his heart was in the right place. They were pretty countercultural people. They were trying to get away with it. They were trying to overgrow or change things.
Yeah.
And
that was my favorite part that endeared me to him was his political activism nature.
You know, obviously there was a financial component for him and Neville doing what they were doing. But in a way, it started a countercultural revolution. The reason why people are so interested in Super Sativa Seed Club is because so many legends exist of weed grown in Canada and America of those strains by people
that
they bought from them. So they played a pretty big role, them and Neville. Are really the two groups that started spreading all this seed everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's pretty important because they laid the foundation for what came after. I mean, it was also interesting because we've already, you know, we always wondered, but hearing how, when they saw what happened to Neville and they saw Green Merchant and they saw the international police pressure, that's what made them decide to disband for a long time.
Yeah.
And not continue because they saw, you know, the price that a lot of these pioneers paid to do this kind of stuff, you know, was pretty intense.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to mention just before I forget, and that this might be really pertinent because it's kind of experiencing a resurgence. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when he was talking about his skunk haze.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So first of all, that's another piece of evidence that, you know, there was at least three people that seemed to get haze from Sam Skunkman when he came over to Holland the first time.
Yeah, we have Leonard, Neville, and Carell.
Correct. And, you know, they all, you know, their stories are all similar. It was interesting to hear that that maybe there wasn't even that many haze seeds given out.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe that leads to the fact that he didn't bring over that many and was kind of hesitant, you know, and only wanted to give out so many before he could make his own breeding and increase it again. But
if we were able to talk to him about it, it would actually answer a lot of questions. So hopefully in the future, he'd be into it.
Yeah. And one thing that I think for all the modern haze freaks out there, because with the A5 and C5 sneaking out and a lot of people breeding Cuban black haze, and NL5 haze, I think, is having quite a bit of a resurgence as PIF or Church or different things like that, is how he talked about how this skunk haze that they've had for 35 years, if you grew it under, you know, in American terms, 82 degrees.
Yeah.
You know, if you grew it cold, it only took about 12 and a half weeks to finish and it formed nice buds.
Yeah.
But let it creep above 82 for even an hour or two, and you've got a running long sativa, 20 plus week. It would add another 8 weeks, couple
That's
months.
So wild, man.
And so they, you know, it was really interesting to hear that, because there's a lot of people playing with hazes right now.
Sure.
And if that holds true, I wonder if people ran rooms in the low to mid 70s and were militant about keeping it that low.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that run CO2 in their rooms. There's a lot of data out there where you might run your room in the low to mid 80s to get VPD, you know, or to get more use out of your CO2 and try to rapid fire.
Yeah.
And that might be the exact bad approach for running some of these old hazes.
Yeah.
So maybe if people are listening and interested and you have hazes, try running them in the low to mid 70s.
Yeah.
And see if they form a little different and see if they finish faster, because the difference between 12 and 20 weeks is a lot.
Yeah, that's tremendous. That is tremendous.
You know, so it's also interesting in that, you know, maybe we can eventually get to work on some of his stuff over here, but most people's haze stuff comes from the plants that Neville found.
Yeah.
And so it was crazy to hear that the skunk haze that he has is a survivor from a haze seed that he found.
Yeah. So it's not haze A or haze C.
It's not haze A or it's haze C. It's another haze that is now trapped in genetics that maybe could be used. And a lot of the issues with haze are inbreeding, because there's only a parent or two.
Yeah.
So when you only have a couple parents being used, and mostly C, A is still way more rare to even use.
Yeah.
Third parent adds a lot more genetics.
Yeah, it sure does. That's a good direction and potential.
So it's pretty interesting. Maybe, you know, he's been talking about during that interview, they're starting up the company again, and they've got some initial work coming out. So that made me quite a bit more excited.
Yeah, me too.
About anything that uses that plant, because the other thing too, relative to that plant, is I thought his talk about how different Skunk One was in the mid 80s when it first arrived than what it became later on. And a lot of people have considered that Skunk One has been this consistent thing, and we're used to citrus or grapes or, you know, maybe some cheese or funk.
Yeah.
But he said it was kind of rank when it came over.
So that does, I wonder if that holds true to stuff that Sam, Dave had said about breeding out skunk. Breeding out the actual skunky smells, I should say.
I mean, there's not that many people we can talk to that were growing skunk in 1985. But
yeah,
the other interesting part about that is that obviously that skunk haze that he talked about contains that more raw Skunk One.
Yeah.
In addition to a double and another haze, the other side of it is this, you know, maybe before it was hard selected in that direction that we're all so familiar with.
Yeah, it could be like closer to something like an Afghan haze that could be really rank. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting tidbit, because you have so few people you can talk to about what was mid 80s Skunk One like.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true.
And he obviously bought it and bred it and sold it, and it was a big part of his catalog and the years they were in operation. So hearing his opinion about how mid and late 80s skunk was vastly different than what came later was, to me at least, confirmation, you know, that you know, the state that things were in.
I thought it was pretty cool when I think we were talking about Friesland Indica, where he was very honest and said he wasn't really stoked with where he's seen Friesland been taken now as it's been grown and bred and F-gen'd. Like, he wasn't really stoked with the current offering of Friesland out there.
I mean, you know, I understand from his perspective. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
One thing One thing that's certainly true is with Instagram and other forms going on these days is that that's the way that a lot of people interact with a lot of cannabis. They never get to try.
Yeah.
So looks have become incredibly important.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, so you go to the looks of some of those 80s and 90s strains, pretty rough.
Yeah. There's some of them a little rough.
You know, there's pretty rough. They might not be the most resinous. They might be kind of leafy. They might look kind of fugly.
Yeah.
Put that next to, like, you know, some kind of very modern, very gorgeous looking plant.
Yeah.
And by looks alone, it kind of looks like you're drawn in squiggles or something, you know?
Yeah, it's
like,
for sure. Finger painting.
But it also reiterates that, like, you can't look at effect with your eyes.
Exactly.
So it could be a super, there's a lot of haze out there that's kind of ugly, mm-hmm. But it works really good. I mean, there's famous haze in New York that gets sold brown.
Yeah.
And in modern times, it's not very easy to sell brown weed.
No, but that but name it tastes, sells it. That name.
But yeah, but it also, it tastes great and it works.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So the smoke is great. You know, the fact that it, I mean, even so, you know, we had this cut that, you know, my friend helped make the chocolate diesel, right?
Yeah.
And it was a combination of chocolate Thai, mm-hmm. crossed to the 91 and then crossed to sour diesel.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy too. Like it was legitimate old, like 80s chocolate Thai, smoked in type stuff. Right. And eventually it got lost because it was super potent. It was like super Thai, super chem. It knocked you on your ass, but it cured brown.
Yeah.
And people hated it.
Yeah.
For that look, even Chem 4. Chem 4 can sometimes cure to like a very light brownish. It still looks the resin and all that, and the bud itself looks amazing. But people don't like brown.
The old Clockwork Orange mom was the same. We called it orange, not because of the flavor, but it was more because of the actual color of the plant when it was done. You know, it was more of a golden orange brown look to it. It was unique in that sense.
But really, I mean, you know, you talked, his interview is not that much different than in what a lot of us who have bred in various houses and various ways and tried to get away with it here and there. You know, and they were just grabbing the best stuff they could at the time. Some of them were straight strains. Some of them were bag seeds that they found out of good weed in coffee shops.
Yeah.
Which is how a lot of breeding in America happened too later on as well. A bag seed, has ruled the game for, you know, and so it's cool that things are opening up, and we can talk to people like that who have such a vastly different experience of starting then. You know, maybe we can get some more, you know, if things open up a little bit more in America and over there, there could be some actual, like, more closer collaborations.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's been a lot of illicit flow back and forth between the Dutch and America and Canada.
Yeah.
But it would be neat to be able to one day to actually do it.
Yeah.
Because we each have some pretty amazing things and we have some different lines and we have some things that segregated from each other. Over time, you know, you talk about him being able to go to Canada and there's some Super Sativa Seed Club stuff that still exists.
Sure.
And they might be able to get it back. And then,
you know, that brings me to another part though, was when I was talking to him, and this might've been actually a private conversation, but it was talking to him about the people that have made whole companies off of selling illicit, but unreal reproductions of Super Sativa Seed Club just to market on the name and move seeds fast. And when he was talking about resourcing genetics, that's going to be a problem. That is an actual issue now that so many people have made different Super Sativa Seed Club repros, and it's going to make sourcing a little harder for some of it.
Well, we've talked about this on previous podcasts in the sense that it's really only the last maybe 5 or 6 years that there's been a massive resurgence in trying to find ancient and original beans.
Yeah.
There was a big era where everybody wanted new.
Yes.
And the old stuff was, most of the stories were pretty honest because nobody cared.
Yeah.
And now that things have legalized and things have opened up and lots of people have kind of the same things, there's been this massive explosion of I found these seeds in my old connections dresser, my yes. grandma's freezer, my this, my that. These have been faithfully reproduced, and not just SSSC, but every yeah, old exactly. legendary line you can think of. There's dates associated with them. Some of them are super early.
Too early. And it makes yeah.
it, yeah, it makes it really hard to sift through
yeah.
And find the real because there's there as people get more excited about weed and people get more excited about the history and stuff, they're gonna want, just like we do, they're gonna want to try some old pure lines.
Yeah.
I would love to dig through everything from the seed bank and SSSC sure. now, being my yeah. age and knowing what I know now. It would be yeah. amazing to dig through all that. And so people pray, it's, you know, it's kind of like the roadkill skunk thing where mm-hmm. there's a market demand for certain things now. And so there's a market demand for old.
Yeah.
And so hopefully some of his old stuff legitimately did exist.
Yeah.
But
I know a few reproductions are out there that are legitimate for some of them, but it just goes to say that it's cool that people are getting so into researching cannabis to the point of really getting into provenance and stuff like that. So it combats that, because if stuff like that doesn't sell, if these guys who are doing these reproductions, that you're, it's pretty obvious usually when these guys are working their yeah. game.
They're, I mean, really, it might be obvious. It might be obvious to us. It might be less true. Obvious to others, depending on, you know, how in tune your scamdar is or whatever. But
that's true.
I yeah. do think that for most people, you know, there's a lot of strains. I'll be frank. Like, I went to a lot of Amsterdam trips. I bought a lot of seed. Mm-hmm. Most of it was not keepers.
Yeah.
I did find some cool stuff. Certainly others found some elites that have survived to this day off the same lines that I bought.
Yeah.
But even back then, it was a total crapshoot, and there was a lot to not be impressed by. So, you know, him looking and being honest and being like, "Oh, the Friesland, it's not so nice."
Yeah.
But still, if it is real, yeah. the cool part about it is that opening up the gene pool and adding genes that have been lost over time and aren't being used, we have too much overuse
yes.
of too few lines in cannabis right now. So a lot of 80s and old things by themselves might not be all that great, but they mm-hmm. could widen the gene pool, and you never know what they might pop in outcrosses.
Absolutely.
You know, for we just CSI, who knows where the ABC work will go.
Yeah.
That's still in its infancy. As you start hybridizing it with things and adding those genes in and making polyhybrids with it. So to me, some of the most value, if anything from the 80s or early 90s survived, even if by itself it's not that great, it might have traits or things that you add into something really inbred.
Yeah.
And you get something surprising.
Yeah. Because you never know how terpenes will modify other terpenes or thiolic expressions. You never know. And with new and novel expressions, or maybe they weren't new and novel in the 80s, but they're back to being new and novel now. And that you never know how that'll change and modify stuff.
And, you know, one of the things about breeding is you tend to get good results when you cross things that are very dissimilar to each other.
Yes. Yeah.
And so taking something that hasn't been really worked with much since the 80s or early 90s and isn't in a lot of this Kush, Skittles, cookies, whatever
yeah.
blends of things, it might pop some new and cool things in that yeah. regard. So, you know, all in all, I thought he was a wealth of information.
Absolutely. I thought
he was super engaging and pleasant. He seemed like an older version of us.
Yeah.
He did. So that made it like really fun and relaxing to chat with him about everything.
Sure.
He seems willing to maybe do some more. And so I'm sure there's a lot of history and experiences that he's seen that's right up our alley. So, you know, no promises, but we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah.
And in closing, yeah, I think we learned a lot. I think there was a lot of things that weren't very well publicly known that he clarified. And so not only from a historical perspective, but for the current, I think it was really a good interview.
Yeah, I was really, really stoked to be able to speak with him. It was one of those few times where it's someone that you've always wanted to interview and speak to, and they weren't a complete disappointment. It was absolutely an honor.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. So I hope everybody enjoyed listening to it. You know, it's a little bit strange. It's two part, we'll see how things go, but we hope to be able to bring you some more of some of the pioneers in cannabis and their view on things and how we got to where we are. So, you know, thanks and peace, everyone.
Thank you.